I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 589. We called an audible. I know last week we promised you the Dirty Dozen. We will push that to next week. But due to the death of Carl Reiner, we thought we would honor his passing by tackling Oh God, which was directed by Carl Reiner. So there you go. I guess let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Of course, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. You'll probably be happier in the group. Just putting that out there. You can also, the group is called the League of Show Sharers, but you can also become a real life League of Show Sharers by sharing a show episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week are Lane Levanway, Glenn Cougar, Mellon Brewer, Chris Valls, Ralph Tribble, Brent Smith, Travis Tewitt, Tammy Sherman Powers, Griffin Fox Smith, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Sanders, Ron Johnson, Aaron Marlowe, Julianne Jordan, Chris Magic Man, and Chris Williams. So thank you very much. Gender neutral guys, we appreciate that. And also our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you can get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out and we appreciate that. So there we go, I guess. Oh God. So I'm just curious, had you guys ever seen any of these movies?
I saw the boxes for them. Does that count?
No, it does not.
As far as I got.
I had seen the first one, but a long time ago, like as a kid and maybe on TV or something. So
yeah.
I didn't really remember it. I mean, I remembered the general premise of it, but the details, no.
Yeah, I mean, so I remember when this movie came out. I would have been like 7-ish years old. So I remember it coming out, and I remember just it was massive. I mean, it was just huge.
So, okay. So my question, is it massive because of Carl Reiner, George Burns, or John Denver?
Or religion.
Yeah.
I think it's all of those. I mean, honestly, the religion thing you would think would work against it, right? So many people have their personal beliefs. And if a movie about religion tackles any part of it incorrectly or does what they feel denigrates their religion, like, it's amazing that this movie seems to have come out without creating any degree of controversy whatsoever.
Because the internet didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
People would have just had a field day picking little things apart.
Oh, man. If this came out in 2020, this is a Kirk Cameron classic right here.
But it's not like,
but
it's not preachy in the way like a Kirk Cameron like megachurch kind of movie would be.
No, it's not.
Like,
it kind of is.
I mean, its preachiness is ultimately like be nice.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Yeah.
I mean that's basically what the core of this movie is don't be a and so it really they do thread that needle in terms of it doesn't really go up against anybody's religion. They never address even the... They never really address the existence of like, Jesus or Muhammad or anything. Like, I mean, they acknowledge that these other religions exist, but they never do anything to indicate if one of
any
them
of
is,
them are wrong.
Right, or right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Sure.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but this movie, it made $41 million in 1977. So,
that's a lot of money.
Adjusted for inflation, that's $173 million today.
Golly.
Yeah.
I think any studio at this point would kill for one of those.
Absolutely, especially for a comedy, you know. And
oh yeah, for sure.
And George Burns at this point is riding high, right? Like his career had been resurrected a few years prior with a movie called The Sunshine Boys.
And, okay.
He won an Oscar for it. It was his, I think it was his first like film role in like 35 years or something like that. Like,
so I guess I always think of him as the old man, but was he a stand-up comedian before?
Absolutely. So he was. Okay. So he was part of a comedy team called Burns and Allen. Like, I guess I forget that a lot of people don't know this part of the story, so let me recap. He started...
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. He started in vaudeville. He was a vaudevillian, an old-school vaudevillian, and he was in a comedy team with his wife called Burns and Allen. Her name was Gracie Allen. Have you ever heard anyone say good night, Gracie? Have you ever heard anybody say...
Sure.
That's Burns and Allen. So at the end at the end of their act, he would always say good night, Gracie, and then she'd go good night, Gracie. She had this kind of squeaky voice, and she played her he was the straight man, and she her persona was kind of this wacky, ditzy person who had this really skewed logic that for some reason still always kind of worked out for her. almost like how Green Acres would work, but not with that country theme, but like how Green Acres, just that community had this weird kind of alternate logic that made no sense, but somehow it always functioned. Like she was like a one person version of that. And then he spent the bulk of the time kind of mystified by her, mm-hmm. but obviously in love.
Kind
with
of
her.
Like how I was while I was watching this movie.
Yeah. So they were huge. They had a TV show together that was very popular, ran for, I don't know, 6 or 8 seasons, I think. I mean, it was on for a long time. And it's actually like people have kind of forgotten that TV show, but it was definitely ahead of its time. I remember Kevin and I had a conversation about it not too long ago. Do you remember you sent me you were watching the original Gary Shandling show?
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about how he talks directly to the camera and breaks the fourth wall. And you were like, oh, man, you're like, I've never really seen a TV show do that. And and I sent you clips from the Burns and Allen TV show because they would do that all the time. Like he would like on the Gary Shandling show. It wasn't just that he would talk to the TV show. It's like he would step outside of the TV show and acknowledge that they were filming a TV show and then step back into the TV show and then continue on with it. And they would do that on Burns and Allen all the time. He would like stop in the middle of a scene and then turn to the camera and talk about what was going on and then step back into the scene and they would just pick it up. And in the meantime, they would also acknowledge the fact that they were filming this television show while they were filming this television show. It was very meta before meta was a thing. And so it was groundbreaking in a lot of ways that I think it doesn't entirely get credit for. But she died in, I think it was 64. And so, and then... He would still pop up on things as a solo act, you know, but he really didn't have a whole lot going on. Like he was Abbott without Costello, and
sure.
And then in the early 70s, was it 74, 75, they were shooting The Sunshine Boys, which was written by Neil Simon, and it's about an aging vaudevillian team that are getting back together for like a reunion segment on a TV show, but they haven't spoken with each other in like 30 years, and they positively hate each other. And And it was set to star Walter Matthau and Jack Benny. And then Jack Benny
died. That's not where I saw that going.
No, totally. And then Jack Benny died, and they wanted another comedian kind of from that era. And they got George Burns, and he ends up winning an Academy Award for it, and it completely resurrects his career. And there's this period in the 70s where this 80-year-old man was box office gold.
He was everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That's what I remember. I remember him, me as a kid, like George Burns was kind of like that crotchety old man, but he was everywhere. All the time. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he was doing commercials maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he like loved to work. And so he would take anything. And I don't even mean that in like a way.
Like, he was a working man. He was a Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Actor.
He just loved to work. And so he would pop up on an episode of Alice, or he would do, you know, Bob Hope specials. Not that those were bad things to be on, especially for a comedian of his era, but he would just do whatever. And, right. and he would take his nightclub act on the road and do that. I saw him twice when I was a kid. And the last time I saw him, he was probably 97, 98 years old. I mean, he died in, what, 1996? He was 100 years old, and I think his last credit might have been 94. I mean,
he died 49 days before he turned 100.
Is that what it was? Okay, yeah. I mean, because he used to always joke, they were like, are you going to live to be 100? And he was booked into, like, Caesars or something for his 100th birthday, and he was like, and he always said, he's like, well, of course I will. I'm booked that day, you know?
So was he tight with Carl Reiner?
I don't think exceptionally so. Like, so with Oh God, this will not come as a shock to you, but this is not who Carl Reiner originally envisioned as playing these roles. Would you like to take a guess as to who he envisioned?
Was it somebody of the same era or somebody younger?
Two people you would know very, very well.
Oh. Mel Brooks.
There you go. He envisioned Mel Brooks as God, and in the John Denver role, he wanted Woody Allen.
Rob? Oh, I was going to say Rob Reiner.
Yeah. No, he wanted Woody Allen.
I could see that working.
I could absolutely see that.
Yeah,
way.
That makes sense.
I think the more kind of neurotic as far as the guy that you know, God is talking to would come off as kind of crazier. And I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
I would also say, though, that like the idea that Woody Allen would land Terry Garr is a little ridiculous. But then I say that and then he
look
know,
at
Mia
the
Farrow? That was kind that Mia Farrow and who was it? Who was in Annie.
Diane Keaton.
Oh, yeah, I mean, all his movies.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He's always putting that.
but he was with Diane Keaton in real life, too. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, but yeah, if you look at the women that he was dating
attached
back in the
it,
day.
Right.
I mean, that
makes sense, I guess.
You know,
that's
yeah,
right.
Like, I get and, on paper and the character you see in the movies, you're like, really? But whatever it was, I mean, he was out there getting it, man.
Yeah, 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 it's that nerdy, neurotic comedian thing.
But I think that would have been a great movie. I mean, I like the movie we got, but I think the movie with those two would have been very different, but I would be.
Yeah, I mean, I love Mel Brooks. I mean, he's a genius. And I mean,
did you hear the story about Blazing Saddles? Have you heard this?
I've heard a lot of stories. You'll have to be more specific.
So they wanted to make a Blazing Saddles sequel.
Oh, wow.
And Mel Brooks said in the contract, they said the only way you're going to ever make that I'm going to sign on for a Blazing Saddles sequel is if you make a TV show. He's like, there's no way. Like, he put that in there on
purpose.
Oh,
I've seen the TV show.
They made a TV show.
Right.
Yeah.
It's horrendous.
But they've never aired it.
Yeah, it was an unaired pilot.
Right, it's just on the DVD.
That's the key. So in the contract, it says there has to be a produced Blazing Saddles TV show, which we know was Black Bart. Lou Gossett Jr. played Black four seasons. Four seasons of a show that was never going to air just so they could make a Blazing Saddles sequel, which they never did.
They did four seasons of it.
There's four seasons. That's from Mel Brooks' mouth. There's
I've
four
never
seasons
this.
Of that show that were produced Yes. That
I've just seen that pilot. I didn't know there were four seasons of it.
4 seasons of that show.
Well, that's insane.
That exists.
Like, that has to be released to someday.
So that they could get, I mean, they have their own network. They have their own streaming service now. Just throw it on there. That's what they're doing with everything else at this point.
Yeah. It depends how desperate they get for content with everything locked down, you know?
Yeah, if they need to, you know, apparently there's a 170-minute cut of Batman Forever.
They're getting desperate.
That's a much darker version of Batman Forever.
I love Batman Forever. I'm not saying, but like the fact is that Hollywood isn't producing any movies. Like they're not allowed to with the coronavirus. So eventually there will be nothing to release. So when they're going to Batman Forever director's cut,
we have a 2.5-hour cut of Batman Forever, which is just Batman looking at a giant bat.
Well, the thing is, it was really ahead of its time, though, because he wanted nipples in that version. And so you're going to see.
Doesn't he put nipples in that version? He does. Batman
Forever
has
nipples. They're not as crazy as that next version.
Well, that's true.
There is a deleted scene where he actually nurses a penguin.
That's why it's
a darker movie.
Yeah, I just thought that was funny. It's a darker movie, all right. But yeah, the fact that Warner Brothers tried to get a sequel and wouldn't, you know, produce a live action TV show.
I watched Blazing Saddles last night. That is one of the funniest movies of all time.
That's great.
I love that movie so much.
Well, just real quick, while we're talking about Blazing Saddles, the next movie we will tackle as we get to its misbegotten sequel, we're skipping the second one and going to Oh God, You Devil, which is the third one. It is written by Andrew Bergman, who was one of the writers of Blazing Saddles. He wrote the original screenplay, Tex X, which they liked and then reworked into what we now know as Blazing Saddles. So this actually has some connective tissue to Blazing Saddles.
Well, very.
I did that on purpose.
But anyway, so back to Oh God. It was a massive hit. I mean, it was the ninth highest grossing film of 1977. And just to put it in perspective, number 10 was Annie Hall. Number 9 is Oh God. Number 8 was The Spy Who Loved Me. So it made $5 million less than a Bond movie.
Yeah.
That's Roger Moore?
Yeah, that's Roger Moore. I think that's
Roger
Moore.
Connery.
I'm not a big Bond guy, so. It's a Roger Moore, yeah. It's the third Roger Moore movie. So, then coming in at number 7 was The Deep. Number 6, A Bridge Too Far. Number 5, The Goodbye Girl. I think people have really forgotten how popular those Neil Simon films were back then. Number 4, Saturday Night Fever. Then number 3, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is the first movie on our list to cross the $100 million mark. Number 2, Smokey and the Bandit at $126 million, which is a staggering sum in 1977.
Gee, I wonder what number 1 was.
which is even more staggering. Number 1, Star Wars, $221 million. And Oh God actually was the movie that finally bumped Star Wars from the number 1 slot in the box office.
For a week.
Oh, really?
For a week. For 1 week. And then Star Wars
for 1 week.
Came
and then
back.
I went back.
Yeah.
Do you say Close Encounters was the same year?
Yeah.
And that's Terry Garr, too, right?
Yeah. That's another movie where Terry Garr is married to someone who is going.
talking
crazy and nobody believes him.
And Young Frankenstein. Well, yeah, there's a Mel Brooks connection.
But I'm
there.
Just saying, like, she's also involved with a whack job in that movie, too.
I just thought that was funny. I didn't realize it was the same year. So, wow, that is what a
coincidence. She was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She was insanely popular, if I remember right. Like, in the late 70s, early 80s. She was in Mr. Mom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's the
she's Mrs. Mom.
Mrs. Mom.
She's Mrs. Mom, that's true.
Yeah, and she definitely played that kind of put-upon wife or girlfriend a lot. She's in Tootsie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was written by Larry Gelbart, who wrote this movie.
Well, there you go.
And
Larry Gelbart was the creator of the television show MASH. So he wrote wrote or directed 42 episodes in the first 4 seasons of MASH.
Wow.
So, I mean, that, you know, and he had worked with Sid Caesar. There's a lot of Sid Caesar people attached here, too, right? Like, so Carl Reiner wrote and was on Your Show of Shows with Sid Caesar, and then Larry Gelbart was a writer in that room, and then they wanted Woody Allen and Mel Brooks, who had both worked with Sid Caesar. Sid Caesar was just had a gift for picking comedic talent. Like, it was, you know, because Woody Allen was in that room, Neil Simon. It's crazy when you look at the people who wrote for him.
I wish there was a way to stream Your Show of Shows.
Well, most of them don't exist. They didn't save them. So they're,
I know, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. I just wish there was a, like, it's so frustrating that you can't go back and watch those unless someone somehow.
Yeah.
Maybe like, has it on VHS. I don't know. Well, I guess you can have it on VHS, can you?
If they filmed, I don't know how, like if they got the film reels somehow and scanned them.
I think a lot of it, they just didn't even think to keep. It was so early in the history of television, they didn't think anybody would care. There is a movie called 10 from Your Show of Shows, and it features 10 sketches that somehow remained from Your Show of Shows. So if you're ever looking to kind of see what that was about, 10 from Your Show of Shows is a movie that's out there somewhere. They used to show it on cable every once in a while. I saw it when I was a kid.
Huh.
Yeah. Wow. So I guess getting into this movie and impressions of it. So I came in having not seen it since I was a kid, didn't really remember much of the details, just the overall premise. I was pretty disappointed, honestly, with...
I was not a fan at all.
I just didn't think it was that funny. Like, it's directed by Carl Reiner, stars George Burns. It's a sweet little movie, I guess.
Right.
And, like, to me, I would equate it to, like, a family movie. Like, you could watch this with the family.
Totally.
It's got a nice message to it. But to me, I was just like, this isn't... I'm expecting this is going to be a funny movie. And I feel like maybe they were a little bit too afraid to, you know, be funny around the subject of God and religion or something, because to me, I couldn't believe how subdued it was coming from Reiner, especially. I'm thinking this is going to be jokes a mile a minute, and, you know, yeah, it's somewhat comical when you've got John Denver, you know, people think he's crazy and he gets in all these situations, but, you know, it didn't really make me laugh that much. And so I was disappointed for that reason.
I think it's almost like the last gasp of a certain type of comedy. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I mean, first off, it has very much of a sitcom feel.
I thought the same thing. I thought this felt like a 1970s sitcom.
Yeah, like a good one, but it feels very sitcom-y, especially because, like, and as great as Carl Reiner is, I feel like his talent as a director is in finding the right way to communicate someone's comedic sensibility on film, right? So, I mean, you know, you got Summer Rental with John Candy, and then, you know, he did three movies. Four movies with Steve Martin.
Don't Wear Plaid. Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. All of Me.
The Man with Two Brains and The Jerk.
Yeah.
And The Jerk, I think, closely mirrors like what you would expect from Steve Martin if you were familiar with his stand-up. And like to figure out a way to get Steve Martin's stand-up into a story and onto the screen is difficult. You know what I mean? And
yeah, but that's a perfect example. Like The Jerk, I mean, that movie is hilarious. And so I'm thinking Carl Reiner, he's got George Burns, who's very funny. I mean, if you watch those roasts with George Burns, the guy is hilarious. And so, you know, this movie was very different. And again, like, I mean, I think it's a cute little movie, but I'm expecting it to be, you know, really funny. And to me, it was just like a, I don't know, some kind of Saturday morning, you know, easy going thing.
Yeah, this is like a late Saturday morning, you know, 12 o'clock movie.
Saturday afternoon movie.
We know the kids aren't, you know, away yet, so let's throw something on there that will not offend anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't stand John Denver either. Like, I don't know.
When did John Denver become an actor? I mean, I know he was an extremely talented musician. I don't remember seeing a lot of stuff with him acting. Like, how did that happen, Tom?
I'm not really sure how that happened.
I mean, the guy has so many hits and sold a ton of records. I mean, we all know John Denver, the singer, but geez, like, going back and watching this, like, as a kid, I didn't realize it was John Denver in the role. Like, that part escaped me. And so, you know, watching this, I'm like, weird seeing John Denver act.
The best part for me is Paul Sorvino. I like the Paul Sorvino character that felt like a Rob Reiner thing. to me. And I loved it. I thought it was great. Donald Pleasance is in this movie, which I think is amazing.
Well, yeah, he had a much bigger part that got cut.
Yes, they cut Donald Pleasance's role, which I knew Joe would be disappointed.
I was. Well, so in Donald Pleasance's defense, Halloween hasn't happened yet.
Well,
so like he's still, I think he's still like a, you know, a working actor. He, but he, Halloween
he'd been in the Great
year,
Escape.
No, he's a great, yeah. But I mean, so, and what year was that?
That was like, what, 60?
63.
Oh, was it
okay,
that
so
early?
We're looking
okay,
at
yeah.
like, you know, almost 10 years of stuff. But yeah, John Denver to me was like a wet paper bag. Like he just, there was, anytime he was on screen, it was just like, I just couldn't, I was taken out of the movie completely because I just could not get behind his character.
He's just so bland. I feel like if there was someone else, like if Woody Allen was in the role, we talked about how different it would be. I mean, he just doesn't have that energy. Like he was okay in the role, but he didn't have enough, I don't know, like energy to make it really entertaining. He didn't really bring anything that grabs you. He's just, I mean, he's playing the straight man. So he's just like, you know, no, going crazy and no one believes him, but it's not zany enough. Maybe I'm looking for a little bit more comedy with a movie.
Maybe
like
that's
this.
The issue is they're both the straight man. George Burns and John Denver are both playing the straight man. So
they're
like,
both very subdued. Yes. There's yeah, no so one to really, yeah.
With the idea of Woody Allen being in this movie and just being, you know, imagine him sitting in the car when God turns on the shower head in the car. Like that's a different scene altogether.
Well, could also you imagine Mel Brooks being God.
Oh, that'd be great.
Well, the
think
thing
about
is
the
too,
energy he would bring to it.
Yeah. And Mel Brooks and Woody Allen are both joke writers, right? They both started their career as joke writers. So you also have to wonder how much they would have punched it up on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
But yeah, back to John Denver real quick. It's weird because if you look at his IMDb, he has 11 credits. One of them is a TV show like a TV talk show appearance, which I'm not even sure why that's on there because it's like, I'm sure he was on way more talk shows than that.
Do you get like a credit if you were in a skit?
Yeah.
Is that a different credit?
Yeah, I don't know. It just says, the Mike Douglas Show, the Mitchell Trio, and it's from 67, so I think it's a band he was probably in at the time.
Oh.
But clearly he was on The Tonight Show a million times. But other than that, it's like, it's pretty much all TV work.
Yeah, this must have just been his attempt to break into television. Like he wanted to be an actor, and you know, again, I'm not saying that he was necessarily like really bad or anything. He just didn't have like in a comedy, he didn't have the energy that I think that would have really pushed this movie to the next level. Because I mean, George Burns is so funny, and I think that if he were playing off someone that was going a little crazier, because this is someone who's claiming that God talks to him, like that in like on paper, you think would be a pretty crazy, like, you know, you want him to appear crazy to the people and get in these zany situations.
And maybe,
and you know, it just was kind of flat the whole time.
And maybe it's different if it's John, like you said, if it's John Denver and Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Like Mel Brooks can zany it up a little bit and give, you know, let John Denver be that straight man and let Mel Brooks be like the wackadoo, you know, God character.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just thinking of the way that he plays different. I mean, you know, he always plays over the top when he's in his movies, and I'm just thinking of him as God, and he probably, you know, would have put on an accent and the whole voice and everything. And yeah, that would be very different. So
Mel Brooks was at something, and maybe it was like the Mark Twain Award or something like that. And he did some Q&A with the crowd, and somebody shouted out, "Hey, do you wear, boxers or briefs?" And like, even at his old, not old age, but like his advanced age, like he snaps back and just says, "Depends." And it's just like that kind of joke is what maybe I was looking for in this movie.
Right. Well, Mel Brooks, I mean, just talking about Mel Brooks again. I mean,
and Carl Reiner, like both of them.
Yeah, but Mel Brooks is sharp as a tack. I mean, yep. It is amazing that, what, did he just turn 96 the other day, I think?
No, he's younger than Carl Reiner. I think he's 94.
Okay.
So he just turned 94, yeah. And, I mean, the guy, he obviously does limited appearances and limited interviews and all that, but when you hear Mel Brooks talk, it's amazing that he's still Mel Brooks, right? Like, he still has that mind. He's able to joke. He's able to say things on the fly, and, yeah, he's brilliant. And so when Carl Reiner passed away, and rest in peace, I mean, I've been going through the Dick Van Dyke Show and watching all that, and he was absolutely a comedy legend. Just rest in peace. It's a huge loss for the world. And my second thought after that was just like, Mel Brooks, his best friend, I can't imagine what he's going through, because their friendship, it wasn't just like they were buddies and they talked every once in a while. Like, I shared that video clip online of the comedians in cars getting coffee, and Jerry goes and visits Carl Reiner's place where Mel Brooks was going every single day. Mel Brooks would come over, they would get food, and they would watch movies every single day.
Not to make it weird, but they were almost like husband and wife, as much time as they spent together.
Almost like an old married couple.
Yeah. And you always hear about couples together that long. When one goes, the other's not too far behind. So,
hey.
I'm just saying. It's concerning. I'm concerned.
But yeah, I mean, you know, so they've been friends since your show of shows, and that's the routine. And so I was just thinking how heartbroken. I mean, not only, of course, I mean, his family, I mean, you know, obviously Rob Reiner, and I mean, everyone, it's heartbreaking for everybody, but thinking about outside the family, like, Mel Brooks was that close to him. And so I was just thinking,
has there
awful.
Ever been a more like an as successful father son duo?
I mean, Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas.
Yeah, I was gonna, yeah.
Well, behind the camera.
I don't know. I mean, well, behind the camera, it's harder to say, like, just, you know, not everybody.
Well,
I guess
like in the director's chair, I guess is kind of what I'm thinking.
Ron Howard, Bryce Dallas Howard.
Bryce Dallas Howard behind the camera?
Yeah, she directed, she's directing some television at least. She directed, what did she direct that was really good? I can't remember. She directed an episode of something.
Black Mirror?
I don't know if it was Black Mirror. I don't think it was. I mean, she was in it, but I don't think she directed an episode. But
sure.
Technically, I mean, she directed,
I mean,
some
that's
TV.
Fair. I was just thinking, like, I mean, Rob Reiner and Carl Reiner both have some top tier, unforgettable
sure.
movies under their belts. And yeah. I just think
Ivan Reitman.
Nah, good call.
There you go.
Those
That'll
two
work.
Both have huge
yeah,
movies.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, I guess just to get into the movie, so we are introduced to John Denver, who plays a like an assistant.
Kevin, real quick, she directed an episode of The Mandalorian.
There is, yeah.
Oh, see? You're right. Yes. That's
really
a great
good
episode
of
too.
The Mandalorian, yes.
Yeah. He's like an assistant clerk at a local grocery
store.
He's
a manager.
Assistant
I don't
manager.
Think so. There's
he
a
was
manager. A, he's the assistant.
He was
manager.
The assistant,
right, he's the
manager.
Assistant manager.
Oh, not
yeah,
a
okay,
clerk.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's, not a, he's yeah. the assistant. He's the assistant to the manager.
Yes.
and he's leading kind of a, not a charmed life, but a very happy life. He's got a stunningly
it's
beautiful wife.
A solid middle class existence.
Two kids, a very nice house. Like, he's just living this good life. And he all of a sudden is visited by George Burns, who it kind of tells him, he's like, I'm God, deal with it. And I do kind of like this idea that God has become just like an ornery old man with the way things are going down here. I can only imagine what he might think in 2020.
Well, he takes a form that I guess personifies what he's feeling and that people would understand. So, like, yeah, he takes that form to talk to John Denver.
Right. Because a human would never be able to understand what he would look like, could not comprehend what he would look like and what he would sound like. Wasn't this the plot of something like where God, like, oh, it was Dogma. Where like she comes down as Alanis Morissette because everybody can understand that, and she can't talk. She's almost like Black Bolt from the Inhumans. There's your comic reference. Where, like, if a human being hears her voice, their head explodes, which is kind of what happens. I mean, it is what happens in Dogma. And John Denver's character is like, okay, cool. Like, I gotta go. Like, you know, he kind of shuffles him off.
Well, so let's rework it this way. This movie, to me, really reminded me of Miracle on 34th Street.
Very much so.
Isn't this just Miracle on 34th Street with God instead of Santa Claus?
It especially when you get to the climax of the film.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly. Sure. You get to a courtroom scene. Like, I couldn't help but to think that this was almost a soft reboot, or, you know, some kind of soft remake of that, or spiritual remake, because it's a very similar type of movie, you know, with the plot beats, I mean, and all that stuff. So I couldn't help but to think that. And it's interesting because did any of you guys watch the second one?
I did, actually. No. I did.
No. Oh, okay. No. So the second one is almost like an Airplane 2. It's the exact same
story. Which is why I wanted to skip it and go to the third one, because it's just a complete retread, but with a little girl.
Yeah. I can't watch a first and third movie. I just can't do it. You're
a completist. You have to go through.
Seriously.
Wait, yeah. What about The Hangover 3?
Well, I didn't go through the end. I just can't skip one.
But there's absolutely no continuity among the films at all. Right. Like, you can watch.
I just thought I might miss like a joke that they would go back to or something. You know,
you would not.
But I'm glad I watched it though.
Sure.
Just because. But I was surprised how they were, like you said. I mean, it's basically just a retelling of the exact same thing down to the end. Like,
I can get there
with this one. But, like, the way that it ends, I'm like, oh, my God, they're just doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you think Bruce Almighty is a semi-remake of this?
After watching it, I think so, because that's the first thing I thought of Miracle.
Yeah. They were trying to reboot Oh God around that time.
Around the time of Bruce Almighty?
Yeah, with a new person playing God, obviously, because George Burns would have been dead. And the person that they were trying to get to play God, I thought, would have been a great choice. They wanted...
Who was that?
Donald Pleasance.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh.
Okay.
I think she would be great in a role like this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All white suit. I could see it. Yeah.
I think Ellen DeGeneres has some... skeletons in her closet, but we won't get into those. I don't think she's as nice as she comes off on TV.
I don't think she is either, but that doesn't matter.
I mean, no, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but I think that's a Bruce Almighty is what it is. I'm not a huge fan of that one.
I'm not a big Jim Carrey guy, so.
So I'm a Jim Carrey guy up until a point, kind of like Adam Sandler's the same way. Like, I'm they're which are fine up until a point, but Steve Carell's the best part of that movie.
Sandler's back, baby.
Is he?
Well, he just did an incredible film last year.
I mean, okay, so the comedic version of Adam Sandler. How about that?
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought of Bruce Almighty too, but that doesn't have as many plot beats like Miracle on 34th Street.
No, that's called Evan Almighty.
Oh, what's Bruce Almighty?
No, you said Bruce Almighty too. It was just Evan Almighty.
Oh, gotcha. But yeah, so anyway, definitely I think that they had to have, I feel like they had to have kind of reworked, like Larry Gelbart must have used that in his mind as some kind of a layout. I mean, not like everyone's seen Miracle on 34th Street, so I don't know. It just seemed very similar to me.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought you know. But anyway, so back to the
yes.
There's not a whole lot of story here.
it's not, and I will say it's a quick like 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it moves pretty quick.
It does.
It does feel like there's like commercial breaks.
It didn't feel quick to me. I'm just to be perfectly honest, like. It'll be interesting to talk about the next one, because this one, to me, I'm just like, good. I can't help but just like, good God. I'm just like,
that joke got old real quick.
I know, but it's like, I'm waiting to be entertained, right? Like, it wasn't really that funny to me. And so it was disappointing, especially with George Burns in it, because he's so funny. And Carl Reiner in the director's seat, I'm thinking this is going to be a laugh a minute. It's going to be just hilarious. And it, to me, was really, again, and if you're watching it for if you're one religious, because the thing is, I didn't know how religious this movie would get. So,
oh man, it went there.
Yes, way more than I thought. So if you're religious, if you're looking for a movie with the family, again, it's a cute little movie. But this to me felt like I was watching a Kirk Cameron type movie. I'm not talking about
quality.
That's
what I'm saying.
I just mean like this movie is trying to have a good message. And it's just God this and God that, and let's examine God. And to me, I was looking for more of like a funny take on religion or a slapstick kind of a thing that with religion in the background. But this was.
Do you think you could do that? And I'm asking that honestly. Do you think you could make a slapsticky movie that had like religious undertones? Is that even possible?
I mean, Mel Brooks could.
Life,
yeah, maybe.
Life of Brian.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
You definitely could. Okay. Yeah, and I just didn't think this movie is way more serious, right? Like this is a serious.
It's sterile.
It's a very serious. It's kind of a serious examination on God and people being good and all this, where I was not expecting that, and so this is not a movie that I would want to sit down and watch again.
I kind of agree.
It's funny because I enjoy this movie. Like I don't disagree that it's not like this laugh out loud movie, but I think it's a good usage of George Burns. I think I like.
Is this Tom's Monster Squad?
I think this movie's a lot more universal.
No, we're done with that. That joke's over.
This
the joke's
movie's
over.
A lot more universally loved than Monster Squad is.
I think George Burns is absolutely charming in the role. I think he's a great God. I think that he is fantastic. I think he does a great job with what he's given. I think he delivers his lines perfectly for what they are, all that stuff. But I just don't think the script is that funny. Again, not bad, but
yeah.
Not
I think some of it too is I think some of it's been lost to time in terms of just the idea of playing God in this manner was a pretty radical.
What do you mean in this manner?
Like of playing him as this kind of borderline doddering old man
who, okay.
You know, like not, you know, I don't know that we'd had any very many mainstream successful versions where God doesn't look like a bearded old guy
in a flowing
robe. You know what I mean?
And I agree. I think that is probably a lot of it too, Tom, is that when this came out in 77, people hadn't seen a lot of that. So like Joe and I grew up where there are a lot of movies
right. Where
there's God personified and there's funny movies.
Alanis
like
Morissette.
Yeah, you've got Dogma and you have other movies that examine religion and they're funny. And so, and we've even seen stuff like Bruce Almighty and is Evan Almighty really a sequel to Bruce? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Steve Carell. It's Steve Carell's character.
They had Steve Carell locked into a 2-picture deal and he got really hot. And so they basically forced him to make that movie.
Yeah, so we've
is that post 40-year-old virgin? It must be.
I believe so. Yeah, and the rise of the Office, like he and then he had that breakout scene in Bruce Almighty where he's the newscaster and they're making him speak gibberish and
best scene of the whole movie.
Yeah, and so when all of a sudden he got hot and I guess they had had him sign this rudimentary 2-picture deal because they're like, well, you never know, and and so he was kind of obligated. That's the way I understand it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was always weird too, because wasn't he a jerk in that first movie?
He's a big old jerk.
Yeah.
He took Jim Carrey's job, man.
Right. He's a terrible person, and they made a movie about him. And I always found that hard when it's like you're supposed to like the person that was. Oh.
Well, yeah, but that's what
that's
I mean.
The story arc, right? No
the
pun.
Story arc
no pun intended.
Him, right? he wasn't a jerk at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then they're just like, we'll make him kind of a jerk in the beginning of this one.
But I feel like just back to the portrayals of God, this was like there are a couple that predated, but they weren't very successful. But I feel like this really kicked off the idea of going out of your way to cast against type when you put God in a movie. you know.
Sure. No, definitely. That's why I think at the time it probably would have been a lot more prolific.
Yeah.
And so we're losing that to time. And right. So that's not the movie's fault for being made when it was. But knowing what we know now, I just don't think it holds up as well today. And it seemed like a slog to me. I had trouble getting through this one. I'll just say even more than the other ones, and I'll just leave it at that. But like this one to me was very slow.
Yeah. It was definitely plotting would be the best. Like, it was just like, okay, here, let's keep moving plot point by plot point, which we should do on this podcast, I guess. So God kind of says, you're my new Moses, basically. You're going to spread the message and you're going to do this. And in John Denver's defense, he's just like, I kind of like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I kind of like where I am. Like, God is kind of the bad guy. Like,
He's not religious. I kind of like that too. Like he's like, why would you choose me? I'm not one of your believers. I don't even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, I kind of felt bad for him because God has come in and completely uprooted his life. His wife is starting to turn on him because she thinks he's crazy. His kids are turning on him because he's being ridiculed. They're being ridiculed at school. And I guess that's kind of the story of the like prophets is you have to deal with like the people who are your detractors and all that stuff, but keep pushing forward. And I guess that would make sense if John Denver's character believed, but he's just like a dude working at a grocery store.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's like, no, you're going to quit your job. You're going to do this. And like, that's kind of the villain thing to do, to kind of almost destroy this guy's life. Just so he could spread your word that people may or may not believe.
It is interesting to pick a non-believer as opposed to someone that wants it slash asks for it. Like, I don't know. Does he, in this movie, does he really explain why he chose him? Like, other than just saying,
because
like,
he's a good man. Like, yeah. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. He was good.
He was good at heart. He didn't choose Paul Sorvino because Sorvino was just using God's word to line his pockets. Basically, yeah. Again, MVP of the movie. Like, seeing Paul Sorvino as not an Italian mobster and, like, doing a Southern accent as, like, well,
was
kind,
he not,
okay, doing,
was...
doing, an ac- doing an accent.
I also
I love Paul Sorvino. I'm just seeing him do something this wackadoo.
Yeah. I also think hat tip to Larry Gelbart, the writer of this movie, because the idea of him being this corrupt preacher, that predates all of the
megachurch stuff,
Jim and Tammy Faye Baker scandals and Oral Roberts. I mean, they were in existence, but
was the other guy that got busted for something?
What, Oral Roberts,
like, around this time, like, was like paying for,
it was Oral Roberts, wasn't it? No, Jimmy Swaggart.
Was it
Jimmy Swaggart?
Okay,
yeah.
But you know what? For him to write this, though, he surely didn't make that up. Like, there must have been a lot of preachers and people that
sure.
were driving around with Mercedes. And, you know,
absolutely.
This must have been a thing for a long time where the writing is on the wall.
Feel like Paul Sorvino's character is based on, he kind of looks like he'd be based on Jerry Falwell. But there was a preacher at the time who was on TV that would heal people. I'm putting heal in air quotes. Ernest Angley. And he kind of sounds like him because Ernest Angley would end all of his sentences with and
my favorite scene of this movie is they're in the chorus. So basically what happens is God tells John Denver, go give my word to Paul Sorvino. He does that and he goes to the big congregation, big thing. Paul Sorvino, he kind of calls him out, says, you're lying, you're a cheat, blah, blah, blah. Paul Sorvino ends up suing him for slander. One of my favorite, the best scene of the movie is when Paul Sorvino's lawyer is like, look at my client. He's an upstanding citizen. He's you know, going on and on. And Paul Sorvino is trying to cover his rings. Like, he's got his hands folded in yeah. front of him, and you can see, like, his, you know, 10 diamond-crusted rings on his fingers,
yeah.
and he's constantly trying to, like, cover them up. So, and that made me pop. Like, I thought that was really, just the way he's like, oh, no, I've made a mistake in wearing all of these rings, these gaudy rings to this court proceeding about how I'm not taking money from this congregation and putting it in my own pocket.
Well, I just thought it was so funny. I mean, as Tom said, how that predates a lot of the scandals and everything that came out about the these people in power that are spending all the church's money. But, you know, he does say during that one congregation, he's like something like, "You can love my new car," or something.
Right,
like,
yeah, right.
I mean,
right,
that
right.
that just that rings so true. You hear
dig,
about
dig deep into your pockets and give it to the Lord.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can see that happening today. Like, there's been news stories about these
oh,
guys.
Joel Osteen is the worst. He's a scumbag. He's a snake oil salesman.
Yeah, but like, there's been people like just recently where, like, especially because of the COVID stuff, like, remember that they opened it up to churches who don't pay taxes, but yet they allowed churches to get all these loans they didn't have to repay because of the COVID stuff. So they end up getting all this free money, and then one of them got busted because I think he bought a new Rolls Royce and a diamond necklace and like, I mean, he bought all this stuff with the money that the church got from COVID relief. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
but
yeah, so
but everything in his life goes bad. So obviously the wife is like thinking he's sounding crazy. My heart was breaking for him when he goes to school and the son is like, "Yeah, I'm good." And he goes like to walk to get on the bus. And then the little girl, his little girl comes and just looks at him and turns the other way or whatever. Like, it's,
oh yeah.
And it
yeah.
becomes a media sensation and everyone's around at his home. And yeah.
So was that God putting the media there, or was that just the media jumping on a story?
It was the media jumping on a story because okay. It gets picked up in the LA Times and then it starts to go the equivalent of viral in that day and time, because he's on the Dinah Shore show. And like,
how big was that show? I don't
huge
even know what that is.
I mean, she okay. was the Ellen or Oprah of her day.
Okay.
I mean, with, like,
yeah,
yeah,
with,
I mean,
Carl Reiner as a guest, which I thought that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, I mean, that was, there were all these like afternoon talk shows at the time that were, so, you know, you had Merv Griffin had one, Mike Douglas had one. But Dinah Shore was like just massive.
So yeah, so he goes on there, he goes on the Dinah Shore show, tells his story, the same deal. They bring in an LAPD sketch artist. And of course they sketch George Burns.
Yeah.
And so like his life is engulfed by media trying to, you know, get his story, the freaky followers of God, you know, trying to touch him and touch his family. And like the one woman's like, "Put a baby in me." And he's like, "All right, this is okay.
Right.
We've overstepped our bounds here. This is not what I wanted."
He's lost,
which I
like,
guess
he's
is,
lost the respect of his kids. And then his wife is mad now.
That's the story of Jesus, though, right? Like, isn't there a story where he says, "I don't want this. Like, I don't want any of this."
Yeah. Well, most prophets go through that. You know, they have right. that as part of their story. I like, there's Terry Gard's got a good line when during the media deluge where she's like, I went to empty the garbage and two people blessed me.
Yeah.
And then one of them blessed the garbage. And then asked me if our children were conceived immaculately.
Yeah, right.
I like, there are some good lines in this movie. Like, I don't know. I, like I said, I enjoyed this movie. I get what you're saying about it. You know, it's not like super punchy in terms of like joke, but
I really expect it to be with a stand yeah. up and with Carl Reiner directing it. I mean, I'm watching Dick Van Dyke Show, and I mean, that's a sitcom with a setup, you know,
sure.
setup punchline, you know, it's regular type sitcom. And so to me, this just played totally different. And I know part of that's my expectations, but knowing now what I know, like, I just don't think I would sit through it because it's just not as entertaining. It, again, it's a cute movie, but I don't know. I guess I'm trying to figure out why, like, how did they get Carl Reiner involved? Do you know any of the story of like why he wanted to make this movie, or was it just a job to him?
My guess is it was probably just a job. Well, I mean, he knew Larry Gelbart, I'm assuming. And if you look at his directorial career, he doesn't have, like, I feel like this was his first like really big hit.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I mean, obviously he's a name, but I don't know that Carl Reiner was ever an A-list director in so much as
He got to pick and choose what he wanted to do.
Well, I mean, I think he could pick and choose because he probably didn't need the money, but I don't know that he was ever an A-list director in the way that anybody was like, let's go see the new Carl Reiner movie.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know? Because, like, before Oh God, it looks like, you know, obviously a bunch of TV work, and then he directed a movie called Where's Papa, and then one called Enter Laughing, which was an autobiographical movie. Oh, he directed a movie called The Comic with... starring Dick Van Dyke, which is,
well, there we go.
Not all that great, but it's very it's an interesting film more than it is a good film, because Dick Van Dyke plays a silent film star who's really just a son of a bitch, and he just kind of drives away everybody in his life. He's a real jerk, but within the film, Dick Van Dyke recreates a lot of like old time silent comedy type sketches, like as if they were real and he did them back in the 20s. And so it's like I said, the movie doesn't entirely gel, but it's definitely worth checking out just because it's an interesting idea. And there are some really neat moments of them trying to create like old time comedy.
Yeah, and I didn't know if he had any kind of like if Carl Reiner wanted to make some kind of statement on religion, like, because this movie is so much more serious than I expected. I just didn't know if this movie was made to push religion or, you know, like I'm just trying to understand better what this movie is trying to do, because it is taking itself so seriously to an extent, right? And like, so was this movie like, this is a movie trying to teach people that God is real and talks to us, and just because you don't see him doesn't mean he doesn't exist, you know? Like, they're making some very serious points in this comedy. So,
well, from what I understand, I mean, he's a practicing Jew, so like I think that like he was religious in that regard, and I think what it might have been was almost a reaction to the early rise of evangelicalism, because you started to see a lot of TV preachers during this time, and they were picking up TV time cheap and, you know, just paying to be on TV, and you were seeing more and more of that. So I almost feel like it's a reaction to that, because there's there are a lot of little jabs in this movie where, like, there's a thing where John Denver character says, I don't belong to any church. And then George Burns says, well, you know, neither do I. Like, it's OK.
Right.
Like, I don't either. You know, like, so there's a lot of digs at organized religion, especially the, you know, what we would now term megachurch stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So the pastor sues him because he's now defamed this guy, saying he's a phony because he calls him up like during that big sermon thing and says, God talked to me. And he said, you're a phony, you're fake. And
now he's being sued for it, and he doesn't have a lawyer, and he's getting torn up in court. And there's just there's a lot of actors. Like, I recognize the judge, the guy who plays like the regional manager of the grocery store.
That's David Ogden Stiers
from MASH.
Yeah, right? I can't help but think it's connected, even though Larry Gelbart would have left MASH by the time David Ogden Stiers came on as Winchester. He ends up on MASH the next year. So
yeah, there's gotta be.
So, I mean, timing's a little spot on.
They're in the industry, and you know, Hollywood is more of a close circle than it is nowadays.
Right.
And,
yeah.
But yeah, being that Carl Reiner directed this movie, I'm sure he can get plenty of working comedians as these little bit parts.
Yes. And like we said, Paul Sorvino, Donald Pleasance. So he's getting eaten up in the courtroom, and finally he says, I've only got one witness, and it's God. And of course, everybody kind of laughs at him, and then here comes George Burns into the courtroom.
Well, I think I want to address real quick before we get to the very end. They have there's a nice moment where they want him to have God answer a bunch of questions, and they give him these cards.
Oh, yeah, and they wrote it all in, like,
and they wrote it all in Aramaic. And so, and then he has to, like, and then God goes through and answers all the questions for him. Like, I thought
that was a good little bit.
Yeah.
So God, you know, he gets, you know, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? And he said, so help me, which I thought was a funny little joke. And he kind of lays it out. Like, he puts it, you know, nobody really believes. He does like a card trick and makes the cards disappear.
Oh boy, those
isn't really a miracle.
Practical effects were something. Yeah. I'll tell you that much.
And they never.
So we're just gonna cut here, take them out, and then restart it. Got it.
Yeah, like it looks like Bewitched has more mind blowing effects than what they do.
It
here.
Does. I was gonna say. I guess Carl Reiner was not known for his practical effects.
And they never get better. Like
it's
like,
so bad.
Like I mean, throughout the franchise, whenever they have him do something godly, the effects are always awful.
Yeah, they're pretty bad, especially when we get to part three. Yeah, so he walks, he's like, all right, fine, I'll show you a miracle. And he's walking out of the courtroom. They cut the film. They pull George Burns out of the movie. It's almost like when you would tape something off of TV and you would pause it so you'd get the commercials taken out and then you'd start recording again. That's kind of what this looked like. And you know, he walks, you know, the swinging doors open, he walks out, and the judge doesn't really know what to do. So I'm assuming that he awarded Paul Sorvino the money?
No, I think that they were just like, okay, we all saw something here that was unexplainable, and we can't prove it, so how about we all just walk away from this?
Yeah, so earlier in the movie, John Denver asks, why doesn't God just record himself and do a broadcast and all this stuff? And he says, I can't be captured. Like, I can't be captured in any medium. Like
right,
that.
Right. No video, no audio. Yeah, it can't be recorded. Audio.
Which the only flub is then, how is he in a taxi ID when he drives him around in a taxi?
Well, I just pictured like he made his own ID.
Well, it's just, if you can't be captured in a photo, then, I mean, I think that kind of breaks the rules. But anyway, so he can't be recorded. And so the judge, they're recording the whole court session, and he goes to play it back in his chambers, and just the God parts are completely silent. And they try to argue, oh, well, is there a problem with the recording? Blah, blah, blah. And the judge is like, no.
Well, they look at the stenographer, and all of God's parts are gone too. Like, he's like, they were here, but now that they've gone back in the courtroom, even the stuff like that he typed was gone.
Yeah. So they ended up dismissing the case, and, you know, but they all the people there know what they witnessed. Like, they can't explain it, but they all saw the same thing. And so, yeah.
Yeah. So
Santa Claus is real.
Yeah. Santa Claus is real. John Denver loses his job. Mr. Feeney's in this movie as well.
Yeah. William Daniels.
Yeah. He's like the guy who's like the tip top
of the grocery store
of the grocery store.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
That's Kit, if you will. Maybe that's more appropriate.
Dr. Mark David. Craig for our St. Elsewhere fans.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, right. And he, you know, God shows there's a phone booth ringing, which will never be a thing ever again, especially now, where he picks up Bird. You know, John Denver decides to pull over, picks up the phone, and of course.
But there's a sniper trying to shoot at him in the phone booth. I thought it was really strange.
It's a weird end of this movie. And he basically says, he's like, I think the line was, lose a job, save a world. And it's just like, what are you doing to this poor guy? Like, you can't expect him to walk away from this. I'm sure it's an unprecedented court case. He's been all over the news for what I assume is months.
Yeah, no, God's just,
there's no way this guy's getting a job.
He's just leaving him to fend for himself now, and he's I guess he'll have to
start his own mega church,
work for a church, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, what else is he gonna do? Like, people, he's still, other than the court people, who else is gonna not think he's crazy, right? Like, it's only the court people that kind of cleared his name. So
right.
Yeah, God's
right,
just
right,
like,
right,
yep,
right.
Well, see you later.
He's like, if you, and I guess the last line is, what if I need to talk to you? And he's like, you talk, I listen, goodbye. I was like, well, and John Denver smiles at the end, and it's like, I'd be pissed.
He just kind of uproots this guy's life. Like, I just,
he destroys this dude's life.
You know, the thing, it's funny, because like, we talked about how the next one, Oh God, Book Two, great title, by the way, that's about the only thing great about it, but it's a great title, but it's a retread, but with a little girl. And it's like, boy, this really plays bad with a kid. Like,
when you start off the movie by saying, hey, little girl, come meet me in the bathroom.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't help but to be skeeved. Like, I know that it's George Burns as God. Like, we all know what we're watching.
Right.
But when you, if you just take it literally, and
right.
he tries to lure a little girl in a Chinese restaurant with a fortune cookie saying, meet me in the lounge, which means
which
the
is
bathroom.
The closest they come to establishing a religion, because I was like, oh, he's Catholic.
Oh, sure.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, I mean, just the idea of like that a kid would even do that. But it's all. But in part two, just real quick, there are so many things that are of the era. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, but whenever she's in the car with her dad, no seatbelts of any kind.
Right,
they never wear seatbelts.
Well, her dad was an anti seatbelts. He said, "You can't take away my freedoms."
Right.
but
I'll do what I want.
But then when they start testing her to see if she's crazy, and they're giving her these
they
cat
commit
scans,
her.
Yeah, like it's like
you're right. It is. I felt the second one was so mean what God was putting her through, because
yes,
first of all, he leaves for huge swaths of time.
Yeah.
Like George Burns is hardly in the second movie, and he leaves this little girl to be tested. People think she's crazy, be bullied, to be committed. Her parents are getting ready to commit her because it's like court ordered. And it's like, where is God? Like to do that to a child.
Yeah. He left this poor little girl out to dry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, to do that to a child, and it's not any more terrible that he messed up John Denver's life, but at least he's an adult who can fend for himself. But like, yeah, they really messed with this little girl. So it was hard to watch for sure.
And then the closing,
well, I'm glad I didn't watch it.
The closing scene of that movie
is the same scene.
Is the same scene, but then like he's like, she has a real affection for him, and then he's like, okay, I'm out, bye. And then it freezes, the last shot of the movie, it freezes on her tearing up, this 10-year-old girl, and then rolls credits over a static shot of her crying. And I'm just like, what movie did you think you were making?
Yeah, that was a weird choice, certainly. And we should say, like, when we say it's a retread, like, again, it's the same story with I've seen God and you're crazy talking to God and all that. And then the final scene, instead of a courtroom, is this board of doctors
like,
who are
like
trying
a commitment hearing. Yeah.
Yeah. To try to commit her. So instead of a courtroom, it's that. And he does the same thing. George Burns as God shows up, instead of pretending to be God, he pretends to be a doctor, which, okay, whatever. But then he disappears and walks out the door and talks to them. I mean, it is the exact same way to make them believe.
Yeah.
As the courtroom scene. So it was, but yeah. At the
end, that was what? 1980.
Yeah. It was, that one came out in 1980.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't watch that. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm glad I saw it just to see it. I mean, I honestly, and I personally, because I wasn't too fond of the first one, I enjoyed it just as much as the first one. I thought they actually did a little bit, some more interesting things with it. Like, I don't know. I thought the advertising aspect was interesting. She has to come up with a slogan, and it ends up being Think God. Like, instead of Thank God, she puts it around Think God.
Hmm.
And so, I don't know.
That sounds like something a child would
do. Yeah. I enjoyed it just as much. Meaning,
but like, talking about the retread aspect, instead of having the dinosaur thing, it's Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, you know.
Oh.
And Hugh Downs is in that, who also just died this week.
Oh.
He's the newscaster on NBC.
Oh,
he was
wow,
the host
okay.
of 2020 oh. for years. And he was also one of the, he was the original sidekick on The Tonight Show when it was hosted by Jack Parr.
Mm.
Jack Parr famously walked off The Tonight Show on live TV because they wouldn't let him tell a certain joke. And Hugh mm-hmm. Downs was basically the Ed McMahon or Andy Richter, depending on your age. And and he like basically
the Kevin Eubanks.
He basically had to like take over and do the show. He walked off like 8 minutes into an hour and a half long television show
wow.
live. And he's just like, OK, guess I'm going to do this now.
Did he come back and do the show the next night?
No, he left the show for 6-8 weeks before they finally got him back. And
jeez.
And
did
Jack
he do the
Parr
joke on his first night back?
I think he did.
I feel like the only way you get him back is to do that yeah. joke.
And the joke was, the punchline had something to do with a water closet, which is a European way to say bathroom. And and like, that was too edgy. And
good
he's like,
Lord.
This is dumb. I don't want it. Jack Parr won The Tonight Show was a juggernaut. Like, nobody thought anyone could ever replace him. Like, he was
wow.
huge. And
good
I'm sorry,
him,
he
though.
Wasn't the original host. He took over for Steve Allen. My apologies. So anyway, there's all that. I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter @JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter @KevinRBrackett.
This is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So coming up on the next one, the Misbegotten sequel. Maybe it's less misbegotten to you guys because
yeah, it is.
You know. You didn't care so much for the first one. So will be the third one, Oh God, You Devil, starring the hot white comedy personality of Ted Wass. So thanks for tuning in.
Oh, you mean Blossom's dad?
Yeah. Or Danny Dallas from Soap, again, depending on your age. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, Jack throws Madeline out of the house.
You know, you got to give Dean credit. When he has a show to do, it's amazing how he gets the job done. For instance, he's got to introduce everybody on this dais. And believe me, it's not easy. He's got to stand up to do it. In fact, the doctor gave Dean one day to stop drinking. Dean picked January the 20th, 1999. Look, I know at these roasts you're supposed to say terrible things about the guest, but how can you say anything nasty about Jimmy Stewart? He's a doll. I'd even like to take him out dancing.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.